Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Hello, women of strength. It is Megan with my friend Ashley. Hello, Ashley.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Loving all the stories that we're recording and so excited to hear yours. You kind of have a more unique VBAC in a sense of it was a very premature VBAC.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. You're going to share some information for NICU moms because your baby did go to the NICU. And then, yeah, you're a mom of two and a children's therapist. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do for work?
Yeah, so I work with kids ages 4 to 18. Right now I'm telehealth only. I actually work in Twilla, Utah, but I live in North Carolina. So Okay. Everything is telehealth. Kind of happened with COVID. I was out there during COVID. We moved and continued to do telehealth since I've moved. So I only really see 10 and up at this point. But yeah, I see a lot of teenagers all telehealth, and it's really wonderful.
Yeah,
I get
that's
to keep that.
So awesome. That's awesome that you got to keep it and then keep doing it and that you're serving our children. I'm sure you have probably much to say about our children and all the mental health that is going on out there, but there's a lot. There's a lot for these kiddos of ours.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's hard and challenging, but it's also really wonderful and rewarding. And I love that I get to do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for all of your hard work out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We do have a review of the week, so I do want to get into that. And then I really want to turn the time over for you to share both of these journeys. This review is from Sienna. It says, after having a very hard conversation with my OB, where I learned she was, in fact, not VBAC tolerant or friendly, I text my best friend through tears pouring down my face as she immediately sent me a text back with the VBAC Link podcast. Ever since, I have been listening to every episode of the podcast, and it is so beyond helpful and inspiring for anyone preparing for a VBAC. I'm due at the end of September and have made the goal to listen to every single episode before then. I can't say enough for what Julie and Megan are doing for the women like me. I can't wait to rock my VBAC. Oh, I love that review. Thank you so much, Sienna. And I hope that you had an incredible VBAC and way to go for realizing that your provider maybe not have been the right provider for you. I think there's so many people who walk through the VBAC journey who think they may have a supportive provider. And then at that very last minute, they're kind of having those conversations and realizing, oh, shoot, I might not be in the right place. And it is okay to switch and to keep interviewing and discussing with your provider if your provider doesn't feel like talking to you about your VBAC or says, oh, you've got months to go. We don't need to talk about that right now. Those might be red flags and things that you want to reconsider. So thank you, Sienna, for your review. And as always, if you haven't yet, please leave a review. You can Google us at the VBAC Link, or you can leave it on the podcast that you're listening to. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2C section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Ashley. Thank you again so much for being here with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. I never thought I would be. Like when I was preparing for my VBAC, I was listening every single day during my walks. And I just thought, like, oh, if I get a VBAC, that will be wonderful. But I never thought I'd be in a situation where I'd ever be on the show. So it's crazy. It's very wild to me.
I love it. More and more that we record, we learn. It goes full circle. We're in your ear, all pregnancy, all these women of strength
Yes.
sharing their stories, inspiring you, building you up. And now here you are, inspiring and building
Yeah.
others up as well.
Yeah. It's cool to be here. So yeah. I don't know. Do you want me to talk about my first birth?
I
Okay.
mean, every VBAC starts with a C-section. So maybe let's start with your C-section story.
Yeah, for sure. So for my first birth, my son, it was a pretty easy pregnancy for the most part. There was a couple hiccups here and there. I had bad morning sickness, in the beginning in the first trimester, but everything else was pretty smooth. At 13 weeks, I had a spell where I had a lot of bleeding, and that was terrifying. I thought I was miscarrying, and I called my provider in a panic, and that was just the worst 4 hours of my life, I think, because I continuously bled. They finally got me in for an ultrasound and they checked me, and he was just really active and bouncing, and they never knew why it happened, but I was fine.
Did they ever say anything about like a subchorionic hematoma or anything like that?
That kind of sounds familiar. So that could have been it for sure, but I don't remember. But it stopped. Like it was after my ultrasound, it was like the bleeding was done and everything was fine. So it was the weirdest thing, but definitely so scary. Yeah, terrifying. But yeah, so that was bad. And other than that, after my first trimester, my morning sickness went away and everything was pretty good for the most part. Yeah. What happened though, and so I took birth classes, I took breastfeeding classes. I didn't do a ton of research. I just took my little birth class and I thought that was enough. I actually think I even skipped over the C-section part. So now, like, I was like, I'm not gonna need that. I don't know why I was so weirdly like confident that I was gonna be able to have a vaginal birth, but it literally was something that I'm like, I'm good. And I didn't put much thought into it. It's so sweet. I don't know why I did that.
Well, a
But
lot of people do. I mean, it's not what we want. It's not what we think is going to happen. So we just kind of push it aside.
yeah. I didn't do any research at all, and I don't need to know about this. So yeah, I pushed it aside. I didn't want it, obviously. But yeah. So everything was good until about 32 weeks, I would say. I started to get a carpal tunnel, and it just got progressively worse and worse. And it was bad. Like by the last month of my pregnancy, it was unbearable. My fingers and wrists were numb 24/7. It was waking me up at night, like how painful my hands and fingers were. And I couldn't do little things, like I couldn't put a necklace on anymore. I couldn't put my earrings in because I couldn't use my fingers. It was so bad, and it was something I didn't know happened. It was pregnancy-induced carpal tunnel. I had so much swelling in my body, so that's what they said it was. My midwife, who I had found and I really loved her, she referred me to PT. I did that. I did wrist braces every night, and nothing helped. And I kind of knew that was going to happen just doing some research. They say like the only thing that gets rid of it is delivering your baby, basically.
Do they
So
know why it really starts? Is there something within the blood flow? What do we know? We don't know.
I don't know. My midwife kind of just chalked it up to the swelling, like my tunnel, like my carpal tunnel was literally being squeezed by the swelling, right? I'm pretty petite as is, and then I was carrying so much water and so much weight that I think it just, for me, my body just didn't respond well, and I had the carpal tunnel. So that was at 36 weeks when I said it started getting pretty bad, and there wasn't a lot we could do about it. I really didn't want to have an induction. I didn't know much about it either. Like I didn't do a ton of research, but I knew I didn't want it, right? I just knew I wanted it to all go as naturally as possible, my baby to come on his own timeline. But by 38 weeks, I was miserable. I was like, I don't think I can do this. And I was pretty big and pretty uncomfortable, but that wasn't the part that was killing me. It was the carpal tunnel.
Carpal tunnel, yeah.
Yeah, it was bad. So my provider said we could do the membrane sweep each week. We did it at 38 weeks, we did it at 39 weeks, and we kind of decided if nothing happened after my second sweep, we would think about an induction. And I was ready. Like I had to stop working a week before I even wanted to because I couldn't type anymore. Like it hurt to type. And I do a lot of assessments for my job where I'm typing all the time and using my mouse, keyboard, and it was just awful. So we did the membrane sweep at 39 weeks and nothing happened. I was curb walking, I was eating the dates, I was doing the things, drinking the tea, nothing. So at 39.5, I got admitted for my induction at 8 p.m. They did a Foley bulb and then they did the Cervidil, I believe. And that was all fine. I think they also gave me morphine. Be sure that's when they did that to manage pain. I looked at my notes, but it's kind of hard. Some things aren't super clear. But either way, I got a really bad rash. And at the time, they thought it was pups. But then looking back, they think it was a reaction to the morphine.
Oh,
Yeah.
shoot.
Yeah. I was so horribly itchy. It
Oh,
was,
yeah,
and so I
miserable.
had.
You're like in pain and itchy. Oh.
Yeah, and the carpal tunnel was still active, right? That was still happening. So I don't remember it being like super uncomfortable, the Foley bulb. I was more scared of it than I was more scared than it actually was painful. So I was okay. I handled it okay. So then my water broke at, I think it was 2 a.m., I believe. The Foley bulb came out and they started the Pitocin by 8 a.m., I believe, because I wasn't moving enough or I wasn't dilating enough. So water broke at 2 a.m., Pitocin at 8 a.m. I started an epidural, I think, at 5 a.m. before the Pitocin because I was just in a lot of pain. So that epidural, though, was done by a resident, which I didn't know that at the time. And that was one thing I really didn't want. And it wasn't placed correctly, and I had a ton of breakthrough pain. It was horrible. So they actually ended up rethreading that at like, I don't know, 4 hours later, they had to rethread the epidural, remove it, and put it back in by someone else. So bad.
You
And
just
with,
had all the things coming at you.
yeah, so I kind of just say it was a bot. Like everything was botched from the start. It was during COVID. There wasn't a lot of staff. Like I felt ignored. Like there were hours where I didn't see anybody. The Pitocin wasn't managed very well either. I feel like they never really increased it. So, and like I said, after they started Pitocin, I didn't see anybody for like 4 hours. It was absolutely horrible.
So they were just outside watching your strip and you were doing okay. So like, all right, we'll just leave her.
I think so, yeah. And there was like no providers. There was barely anybody on staff. Like it was, well, I shouldn't say nobody was on staff. I should say every single room was booked. They're at capacity. So it was just, and they were low staffed. So it was just not great. So let's see. I did start the Pitocin. I finally got 8 centimeters, I think around PM. Really bad back pain still. And then that was when the epidural was rethreaded or redone. And so then it was just waiting for me to progress. But I couldn't feel anything at that point. Like I think I was just maxed out on pain stuff on the epidural being rethreaded. I had no control of my body whatsoever. I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't like get up and move. It was so awful. I couldn't feel a contraction. I could see it on the monitor and they would tell me I was having a contraction, but I couldn't feel anything. By 5 p.m., they're like, okay, it's time to push. I had no urges to push because I couldn't feel anything. So I started pushing. I remember just being really out of it because of the epidural, because of that, and I'm sure there was some morphine still. I'm not really sure what's going on with that, but like I was just out of it. Did not feel in control of my body. And then I just remember to push and pushing for, I think I pushed for an hour and a half, but every time they'd be like, okay, it's time to push. I would try to push, but I felt like nothing was happening. I couldn't feel anything. So yeah, I think that was probably the biggest reason why I had a C-section is just I blame it on the no feeling, no control of my body. They let me push for an hour and a half, and then they said that nothing, like it wasn't happening enough. I was at 9.5 centimeters, and they could see his head, but they said there was a cervical lip, and they told me I wasn't getting past it, is kind of what they said. They said you're not going to be able to get past it. So after an hour and a half, they told me, they're like, let's talk to you. Well, my midwife was kind of, and she wasn't my midwife, right? She was whoever was on staff. And she, said, I think we should talk about different options. C-section came into it, saying she didn't think I was going to be able to get past the cervical lip. Labor had stalled. So they had the head of OB come in and talk to me. They said, let's bring him in and get his opinion. He said the same thing, like, I just don't think you're getting past this lip. And I think a C-section is the best course. Which, looking back, I'm like, I pushed for an hour and a half and they never tried to move me. Given I couldn't feel my body, but they never
Still.
tried to reposition me. Now I know that if that had happened, like, give me some pressure, right? Like, help me, like, sit up. Maybe I could put some pressure on it. Maybe I could, I know it's swollen, so putting pressure on it could have made it a little bit worse, but I just think there could have been so much more done that wasn't done.
Yeah, and sometimes those cervical lips are baby's head positioning, and we've been pushing and kind of aggravating the cervix, and so rotating and getting the pressure off the wrong spot and equalizing the pressure or getting it over, it can help. Or sometimes that's what it needs. It's not just swelling, it's just the cervix is just there and it just hasn't progressed all the way. And so pushing and pushing and pushing against that is what causes that swelling. And then movement or time, rest, there's so many things in there. There's things, I don't know, other providers have given things like Benadryl or, things like that, things to help swelling. But that's unfortunate that I mean, they were understaffed. So I bet it was like, we just have to have this baby.
I think that's a lot to do with it. I felt a lot of pressure to just get a C-section. No other interventions were offered. Nobody talked about moving. Nobody talked about letting me rest. Now I know. Now, afterwards, when I was prepping for my second birth, I was like, if this happens again, yeah, I should rest. Yeah, I should. Body movement. Yes, there's things I should do. I knew I didn't want an epidural or I didn't want one that strong. That was a huge mistake in my eyes. Not that I had an epidural my second, it went great. But with my first, they just overdosed me. They gave me way too much. So, anyways, went to the OR, had my baby via C-section. I was so out of it. They gave me more pain meds back there because they were going to cut me open. And then I couldn't feel my arms when they pulled my son out. They kept trying to hand him to me, and I could not move my arms. And I was like, please stop. Like, it was so traumatic because I couldn't hold him. And they kept trying to give him to me. But then everything was kind of a blur for a while. And I woke up in the recovery room. I didn't get to hold my baby for 2 hours after he was born just because I was so out of it. So, and then I got to hold him eventually. We were back in my room and I was there for a couple of days. And yeah, it was just recovering from that emotionally and physically was so hard because I didn't prep for it. I didn't expect it. And looking back, I was angry that like it went the way it went and I feel like it didn't have to. He ended up being 9'1" and his head was 97th percentile. So he had a massive head and he was a big baby, but I do think things could have gone a lot differently.
Did he have any like swelling on any part of his head that would have indicated things like asyncliticism or like any bruise or anything like on his head from pushing?
No, but he had a cone head. He had a very,
Okay, so
like,
he was coning. He was getting Caput. Okay.
But that's it, yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering if there was anything specific to, like, maybe a positional thing, but it might have just been your cervix wasn't actually fully progressed before you started pushing.
Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with it. And the fact that when you think about it, I was admitted at 8 p.m. He was born at 8 p.m., so it was 24 hours. I was on my back the whole time. I was not being moved. I was not being repositioned. Nobody, like I said, there was not a lot of staff around. I was ignored. Like, I didn't know any better. I didn't know what I should or should not be doing. I didn't know that I should be moving. I just think that it was. That had a lot to do with it, a lack of like moving around, and I was just on my back. So,
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com. Oh, so you had him, and did you immediately know you wanted a different experience, or were you like just such in shock with everything that you couldn't even process that?
I knew I wanted a different experience. I remember being in my bed after right the day we brought my baby home, him in the bassinet, and I remember being on Instagram just like looking up C-section groups and supports, and that's when VBAC came to mind. I was like, oh, okay, I can have a VBAC. I can do it differently next time. And we only want two kids. We only wanted two kids, so I knew that. That was like my chance, right? Like my second pregnancy. I really had to dedicate myself to, obviously things will happen as they're meant to happen or how my body will allow, but that was so important to me right away to have a VBAC.
So you found, did you immediately find a lot of resources?
I did. I had a lot of great. So I
Yay.
believe that's when I started following the VBAC link. I believe that's when it happened, and there were some other C-section like groups, C-section mama groups, stuff that I followed, and that was really helpful. I would just read people's comments, and it brought me so much, just like relief to know other people had experiences like mine, and that the way I was feeling was like normal, and that was super helpful, for sure.
There's something about having that community behind you, right? Like just validating you, helping you feel like you're not alone in this world
Yeah.
going through this. You're not alone in this world that's wanting something different. A lot
Yeah.
of people say, like, why can't you just be grateful? Like, why are you already trying to figure out, a new pregnancy and a new birth when you're not even pregnant and you've just got this beautiful newborn? And it's like, it's not that I don't love my newborn, and it's not that I don't want this time with my newborn, but I'm starting my journey now to have a different experience. And it's okay that I didn't like my experience, and I still love my baby.
Yeah, and that was what I heard a lot. I heard at least your baby's here and they're healthy, and I know that was just well intentioned, but yeah, that it was really traumatic. You know, my baby is here. My baby was healthy, and it was wonderful that he was born happy and healthy. And but I didn't feel right about it. You know, I felt like I didn't have control. I felt like I didn't have a choice. I felt really pressured, and I didn't have. You know, the birth that I expected to have. That was just really, really difficult.
Well, and you also went through a lot between like the reaction, but then also like carpal tunnel. It was like you were restricted to even move your fingers, and then in your birth, you couldn't even move your arms. It went even heavier, right? And those feelings are just, it can be very, I also, my epidural went higher, or my spinal with my second, it went higher up into my lungs and in my arms. And I remember feeling that panicked feeling and just laying there, and everyone, doing their thing, and me being like,
Yes.
is this how I'm gonna feel for the rest of, like, is this gonna stop? Like, And how am I going to hold my baby? And, all those feelings. Yeah. Well, okay. So you had this precious babe. You decided you wanted a different experience, and how did that experience start?
So the second time around, well, I should say with my first, it took us a while to get pregnant. It took us 13 months. So I was kind of thinking like, I don't know why it took so long. And we were like really trying. So I don't know. I was thinking like maybe that would happen again, as mentally preparing for that. So we had been trying for a couple months and we moved. Right when we started trying was when we moved to a new state. We moved down to North Carolina. So I needed to find a new provider. So after getting settled for a couple months, we'd been trying for a couple months, I found a provider who had really great reviews and I thought, this is great. I got in with her and that was really just to first get checked up and then second to kind of have a plan for if we can't get pregnant, in the next couple months, what should we do? I was thinking about that one medication you can take that releases more eggs. I wanted to ask about that because I was almost 35 and I just wanted to be on top of it. So I met with her and she was really nice, but immediately, like, she didn't read my chart. She didn't know about my first birth. I had to tell her about it and give her that information. After I explained what happened, she basically said that it sounded like it was an anatomy thing for me, and when it's anatomy, because I said right away, I said I want to be back. This is my goal. Absolutely, I told her my story, and after I told her, she said, "Well, that sounds like anatomy, and when it's that, where you're more likely to have a repeat C-section." So she's like, "I'll let you try, but the odds are probably you're going to have a C-section." I felt so defeated when I left that appointment. And I kind of just accepted it and thought, okay, I guess that's probably what's going to happen. She's an expert. She's great. She has great reviews. Like, she must know, right? I left it, that appointment, and again, did some research and I started seeing that that's not really true, right? Like, you still can have a VBAC. What she was telling me was not true. I needed to find a different provider is what that meant. So I just kind of left it at that and waited. The next month we got pregnant, which was amazing. It only took us like 5 months that time, which I wasn't expecting, but that was super exciting. And I did research for VBAC friendly providers. I found the most wonderful doctor. Her practice is pretty much all women doctors and midwives, and they're all VBAC supportive. It's a very VBAC, like when I met with my doctor, she said, "That's what I prefer." She said, 100% I prefer to do a VBAC. I think it's safer. I would much rather do that than a repeat C-section." And she was just very gung-ho about it, and it was great. As soon as we met, she already knew my chart. She read my previous birth. It was like, that was super refreshing. I didn't have to tell her anything. And she had a plan for me. She said, "Okay, if you want a VBAC, this is going to be the plan. We're going to do everything we can to avoid any type of induction and intervention. Like, that's what we want to do." About the carpal tunnel, it was likely to come back, right? Because it was about my body and it was more like my anatomy and how I handle swelling. So the carpal tunnel was likely to happen again. But the problem was the first time around, I got induced because of carpal tunnel. If this comes back, what are we going to do? She started me on a baby aspirin right away. That was more for. I ended up having preeclampsia after I gave birth. So we started the baby.
Postpartum eclampsia.
Yes. Yes. Yep. But that wasn't like a big, that didn't affect that much. But yeah, she said, "We want to prevent that. So at 10 weeks, I want you taking baby aspirin." And she said, "If the carpal tunnel comes back, we're going to do, I think we should do steroid shots. And that should be able to help with the pain, help you manage the pain so we can get to birth without induction, without intervention." Which right there, I felt so much relief because that was the reason induction happened the first time around. But I was also a little angry because I'm like, why didn't my first midwife ever talk about that? Like, that was never brought up. It was only PT. I don't know why that was. But if I would have had that, I think I could have had a much better pregnancy my first time around.
And gone through a lot less pain.
Yeah, more manageable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I left that appointment feeling really good. Like I found this wonderful provider and things were going to go differently this time around. She also said, like, I asked about, this time if my baby was bigger and did it have anything to do with baby. And she said, no, it's not about weight. It's not about how big your baby is. It's about the way the head is positioned and the head is coming out. She's like, big babies can be delivered vaginally. So she just said all the right things.
Yes. Yes. When you were first telling me the story from the other provider that you met, I'm shaking my head. This one, I'm like throwing my hands up, like, yes.
Yep, that's how I felt. She was wonderful. So that was such a relief that just was everything for me. So I left that and right away started prep for VBAC. I already like exercised like lightly every day, but I started exercising. I made that a priority. I did my 2 mile walk every day. I was drinking the red raspberry leaf tea, meeting with a chiropractor. And I met with a doula, interviewed a doula, got that set up. And yeah, everything was pretty smooth. Horrible morning sickness. This was worse this time around,
Oh.
my second pregnancy. And I got horrible pregnancy acne. Like I had never had acne in my life. And then during my pregnancy, it was just horrible. That's the worst. Everything else was smooth sailing.
Interesting. I wonder
Yeah.
why.
I don't know. I thought for sure I was having a girl because I never had that with my first pregnancy. So I'm like, this must be, maybe I'm having a girl this time around. And my morning sickness was worse. So with my
Yeah.
pregnancy being so different this time around, those things, I was like, must be a girl. But it wasn't. It was another boy.
Was
Yeah,
maybe
I was shocked.
the testosterone, because I sometimes get testosterone acne. Maybe it was the testosterone. Maybe this baby had extra testosterone or creating acne or something.
Yeah, perhaps. I was just so convinced though. I did everything but buy like girl baby girl clothes and like all of that. Like I was just like, this is when I
Convinced.
yeah, when I found out it was a boy, I was shocked. Yeah, so everything was good though for the most part. No big issues once we got through the first trimester. And then so what kind of happened was and so I had never truly felt contractions before because my first, I already had an epidural when I started to have contractions kind of, and I didn't know what they would feel like. I was 28 weeks and exactly 28 weeks, and I went to the bathroom and there was mucus, right? And I didn't know it was a lot, and I ended up looking it up and it looked like my mucus plug. From what I saw. So that was at 20 weeks. I had a doctor appointment the next day, and after reading a bunch of things online, people seem to think like it wasn't a big deal and they grow back, and sometimes that happens. So I wasn't
Yes.
freaking out at all about that. Saw my doctor the next day, and she said, like, that was okay. It probably was just part of my mucus plug. She didn't seem very concerned. The next week, I was leaving for St. Thomas on our last vacation as a family of three. It was very important to me. Like, I wanted to go to the beach with my toddler and have just uninterrupted time with him before my baby came. So, this was in March. My baby was coming at the end of May. So, I was like, I was going to be 29 weeks, a good time to travel, I thought. And we would get this great, like, beach vacation with my toddler. So, I was cleared to travel. Everything was fine. And then the Monday, when I was 28 weeks and 6 days. That night was horrible. I had so much pressure and I was tossing and turning all night. I just kept thinking I had to pee. So I kept getting up, trying to go to the bathroom and coming back to bed, but there was a lot of pressure. I didn't think much of it. And, I just knew I didn't get good sleep. The next day was a Tuesday and I just, all day long, I was having like tightening on my stomach and pressure. But it wasn't consistent. I feel like it was like every like 20 minutes to like every 40 minutes, I would feel a little bit of pain. It wasn't really bad though. I wouldn't even call it pain. I'd just call it discomfort.
Discomfort.
Yeah. I looked it up online and that I was exactly 29 weeks at that point and saw Braxton Hicks. And I was like, that's it. I'm just having Braxton Hicks. Didn't happen in my first. So I didn't even know, the difference. And That's I was fine. I just went about my day. We were packing for vacation. We were leaving the next day. And that night, that Tuesday night, we went to bed by like 11 p.m. We had to wake up at 5 a.m. for the airport. That night was excruciating. I could not sleep. I was in pain. I was having probably contractions every 10 or so minutes and tossing and turning, lots of pressure. I woke my husband up at 2 a.m. and we started talking about, like, should I go to the hospital? And I was like, no, I think it's just back to picks. I just think it's gonna go away, which is crazy. Now that I look back, like, it was really painful. And I was just really trying to,
Chalk them down to Braxton Hicks.
yeah. And I couldn't,
And
I
you're
wouldn't,
early.
yeah.
You don't think about it.
Yeah, it was 29 weeks. I was like, there's no way this could be. I didn't, again, it did not cross my mind that it was actual real contractions because I was so early. And then, yeah, there's a huge degree of denial going on, gigantic denial, because I just wanted that vacation so bad. Not that I wanted vacation, but I wanted that time with my son on the beach, and we had been talking about it. So I just wanted to make it happen. So 2 a.m., I woke him up and we talked about it, and we're like, okay, I'm just going to get a heating pad, put it on my belly, and just kind of stay here, and hopefully that'll kill the pain. I think I took some Tylenol as well, and it didn't do anything. I just, by 4 a.m., I was like, I'm getting in that hot bathtub, and I'm just going to hope that that stops this. I was in the bathtub, which again, like, should have been my sign that you just need to go to the hospital. If you have to get into the bathtub, if you have to use the heating pad, like, if all this stuff is happening, I should have done it. But didn't. By 5 a.m., I was up and we were loading the car and we were off to the airport. The whole time I was walking into the airport, I was stopping myself in my tracks to have a contraction.
Oh my goodness.
Walking through the airport, stopping, catching my breath, then I'd keep walking. Wild. It's absolutely wild that I got that far. And it was a far walk to the air, like, to our gate. I was doing that a lot. And finally we got to the gate. We're waiting to board. We are like 5 minutes from boarding. People are actively boarding the plane. We're waiting to board last. I was like, I'm just gonna go to the bathroom. Go to the bathroom, and that's when I passed a quarter size blood clot, and I was had light bleeding on top of that. So I came back and I looked at my husband and I said, I can't get on that plane. I have to go to the hospital. But I said, you guys get on the plane. You and our son get on the airplane, and I'll drive myself. We had our car there. I was like, I'm going to go to the hospital. And I'll just rebook my flight for tomorrow and I'll come out and meet you guys in St. Thomas.
Oh my.
And we debated that. We actually, my husband and I went back and forth for a couple minutes. He's like, I don't think that's a good idea. I was like, no, it's fine. Like, they're just gonna check me out and release me. And I'll meet you guys tomorrow. So thank God he was like, no, let's not do that. Like, let's.
Yeah, seriously.
I still, like, just thought everything was fine. I really thought, like, and I wanted to go so badly. So we ended up, they had to get all of our baggage off the plane. The crew was really annoyed with us, but so be
Well,
it.
whatever.
Yeah. So we held up the flight a little bit for sure. And then I couldn't even, at that point, it's like, I can't walk back to the car. Like, so we called a wheelchair. Someone came and wheeled me out to our car. And the hospital was only 20 minutes from the airport, which was great. We got to the valet, and we couldn't bring my son in. So while my husband went and talked to the front desk while I waited in the car with my son, and they said, that my son couldn't come in to the triage. So, and my husband obviously couldn't leave him in the car. So I just walked myself into the hospital and got admitted, or got seen by triage. And right away, they took me back to the room. I said I was having contractions, and they were monitoring me. And they're like, it doesn't really look like contractions. And I was like, okay, well, something's happening. I'm in a lot of pain. They put the monitor on me and stuff, and they didn't see anything. So then they admitted me to one of the rooms in triage, and they really wanted to check me, but I was not having that. I did not want to be checked. They really wanted to. They ended up giving me an ultrasound and everything came back normal with baby, which was great. But they're like, we don't understand why you're in so much pain because they still weren't seeing contractions. They ended up seeing them on the monitor and the doctor said, you know, I have to check you. This was at this point, it was 11 a.m. So
I
I got
have
checked in
to
at eight.
check you.
Yeah. She said, we have to. She said, we don't know what's going on with your body. You're in a lot of pain. So we won't know unless we check you. And she was really kind about it. I didn't
Good.
feel pressured, but because I had already turned it down, they had asked me, but they're like, we really can't, we don't know what's happening. We have to know where you're at. So she checked me, and when she was done, she looked at me and she said, you're 3.5 centimeters. And I just burst into tears. And because at that point I knew that it was not good. You know, I was too far dilated, for 9 weeks. And she said, you know, you're not going to leave tonight. You're not leaving until you deliver, basically, because you're dilated. We have to keep you until your due date. And my due date was 11 weeks away. So that was the hardest part because I knew I wouldn't see my toddler until I gave birth. And that was horrible. Like, that's what I cared about at the point. Obviously, I care that my baby was healthy, but it was excruciating to think about that. So they admitted me right away, took me to labor and delivery. And I told my husband, I called my husband because he took my toddler home. I told him they're keeping me, you know, and he came back to the hospital. And at that point, the plan was just stall labor as much as possible. Like, let's get as far to your gate as possible. But they did the magnesium drip immediately. They gave me the steroid shots to help strengthen my baby's
Baby's
lungs.
lungs.
Yeah, and they gave me one oral medication. I can't remember what it was called, but that was supposed to help stall labor. And so that was all started and up and running by like 1 p.m. And by 4, my water broke. With all of the interventions, my water still broke at 4 p.m. And baby was coming. They knew it was coming. Yep, so water broke by 4:30, and then it just was pretty, just having contractions from that point on. They were pretty consistent, pretty painful. And then 3 a.m., they really started to ramp up, and they were 3 to 5 minutes apart. They were really painful. At that point, I asked for an epidural. I was really clear that I needed it to be the lightest possible epidural. I talked about my past experience, how awful it was. And the contractions were so strong. I was going to try to not do an epidural, but the contractions were so intense that I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to push because I'm in so much pain. Like, I can't imagine pushing through these contractions. So they ended up, I had a great anesthesiologist who came in. He listened to me. He was absolutely wonderful. And he's like, he knew his stuff, and he gave me the lowest possible dose just so I would be able to take the edge off of pushing so I could feel everything. So that was in place by 4:20. I was complete before they did the epidural, and I had to beg them to. I said I would sit really still, like, please just give me the epidural. And they did. And then I pushed a couple times, and he was born at 5 a.m. I got to hold him. Yeah. My husband got to cut his umbilical cord, and then I got to hold him for like 30 seconds, and then they had to take him up to the NICU.
What a change of plans. Dramatically, so dramatically. So once baby came out and went to the NICU, what were the next steps for you and baby? You got your amazing VBAC, but also, if I could ask, how did you feel? Like, did VBAC matter at that point? Were you like happy that you got the VBAC, but like your gears changed again into my baby's now in the NICU? Tell us about that quick shift of events and what it entailed mentally.
Yeah, so that relief of getting my VBAC was still so important to me. I did not want to have a C-section. I still didn't. That was still top of my mind. And I was really scared when I started pushing. Like, I kept having that fear that he's not coming yet. They're going to make me have a C-section. So the fact that he came out when he did, like, I was just so relieved. And that feeling of being able to actually give birth vaginally, it was like, I can't, it was such a great relief. It was amazing. But yeah, so I was very, very happy about that. The recovery was so much easier. Like, so he was born at 5 a.m. By 8 a.m., I was standing and using the bathroom. I was fine. I felt wonderful. Even with him going to the NICU, he was healthy, and I knew that right away. So that helped a ton. But I feel like the trauma was lessened because I got mine back. I can't even imagine how it would have been for me if I had a C-section.
Good.
So knowing that he was perfectly healthy, other than being a premature baby, like they didn't have any concerns in at all at the beginning. He needed oxygen basically, and he needed to be in the NICU under obviously like supervision and watch. And he was 3'3" when he was born, so he's pretty tiny.
Teeny
Yeah,
tiny.
yeah. And even with that, it's like surprising how much birth, how painful it was. Even like I thought he would, because he was a smaller baby, it would not be as painful, but it was very painful, but still worth it. Like, amazing. The pain was all worth it. So yeah, it was getting that VBAC meant everything to me, and it helped so much with the trauma of it all. It was one thing I got to control in a situation where I couldn't, again, there was so much out of my control.
It's kind of that one thing that you had planned, prepped for, and saw happening when everything else, like you should have been on the beach, like hanging out with your family, and that just all of those things that you saw happening didn't happen. And so to have that one thing really happen, I'm sure felt amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And on that note, every single doctor we saw and nurse that came into our room was like, "Thank God you didn't get on that plane." Because everybody knew the story that we were supposed to be literally boarding a plane when I was actually at the hospital. So, and I almost did. So it's wild.
It is wild. Was there any indicator why you were having the blood clot in the airport and why you were having the bleeding?
So not until I delivered my baby, and then I delivered the placenta, and the neonatal surgeon took my placenta and looked at it. And at that point, he said it looked like placenta abruption. And he found like a 2.5-inch blood clot in my placenta. So he thinks that's why I went into preterm labor, which after I learned that, I looked it up and realized like that can be deadly to my baby, that can be deadly to the mother as well. So I was that helped with the trauma of it all. It was to wrap my head around it, to think that if I had gone longer, something so drastic like that could have happened to myself or my baby. So at that point, I was nothing but thankful for the fact that I had a labor, because that's what gave me my healthy baby.
And they didn't even discover it until after.
Yeah, they had no idea I had, and I don't know if you could typically see it. I think you can an ultrasound, because I had an ultrasound, my normal one at 20 weeks, and then they had one when I got triaged. They didn't see anything, but that the surgeon who looked at my placenta, that's what he said he thinks it was. So I'm so thankful. I really like being able to have that information helped me process it all and
I'm
feel better
sure.
about what happened.
I'm sure it offered some validation and took out a little bit of the what if and why. Why did this happen? Why am I 11 weeks early?
And they sent the placenta off for
Like
what's the word?
testing.
Yes, they sent it off for an autopsy, and it came back inconclusive, and my doctor said like that can happen with placenta abruption too. So that was inconclusive, but again, the surgeon said like that's what he thought it was. So I'm gonna accept that, and I'm gonna take that and just be so thankful that my baby is here. because when I think about what could have happened, you know, if I
It's
had waited,
scary.
yeah, or if my pregnancy continued to progress, and you know, I feel so lucky that it actually happened and that helps.
Do you know what? It just confirms to me how amazing our bodies are, how when something is happening that is outside of the norm, it responds and it's like, okay, this is happening. Now my job is to get this baby out. Like, how incredible is that? Just
And
crazy.
with all the interventions, he was coming. And it's like I say, like he's a smart guy. He knew he needed to get out. And he knew he needed to vacate. And he did. So
He did.
I'm so happy for that.
Good. I am so glad too. So then having a NICU baby, how long did he stay in the NICU?
So they anticipated 11 weeks, which would have been until his due date. He ended up getting out at 8. He was there for 8 weeks. He was 37 weeks when he was released, which was surprising. He did wonderfully. And so that was just so great that he got out when he did a couple weeks early. But yeah, 8 weeks in the NICU. It's a long time.
It's a very, very long time. Do you have any tips for parents who may have a NICU baby in the future or anything like that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me, the first couple of weeks, we went every single day, but we didn't put a ton of pressure on ourselves to stay for too long. At that point, he really just needed his rest and he didn't need to be stimulated by us at all. They didn't want him to be stimulated. So we'd do a couple hours of skin-to-skin, which was great. But I really let go of the guilt of of being there 24/7. There were parents I saw that were there 24/7, and I would compare myself and feel guilty that I wasn't doing the same. I also had a toddler at home, but that was a big thing, is like in the beginning he didn't really need me to be there. He needed his rest. So that's one thing, is kind of give yourself a lot of grace and do what you need to do when your baby's getting taken care of and under the best supervision, right? We had the best doctors and nurses, so we didn't need to be guilty about that. The other thing, I didn't know until a couple weeks before he was discharged that we could request a lead nurse. So that made a huge difference too, because every day we had a different nurse, a night nurse, a different daytime nurse, different weekend nurses. When we found out from another parent that we could request, if we liked a nurse, we could request that nurse to be there every single shift that they would be with our baby.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So when we learned that, we got to request the nurses that we loved. And it was night and day. Like I felt they obviously only worked three shifts a week, both of the nurses we requested, but I knew the days that they worked, I felt so much relief because I knew they knew my baby and I knew how they took care of my baby.
Yeah, that actually sounds like it'd be so amazing because you do, I mean, 8 weeks. Going to be cycling through quite a few people within those 8 weeks. So to have that familiar face and that relationship that you can get established, I'm sure meant amazing things for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a tip I wish I would have known sooner. I really think it helped him progress too. I think people had said that just having that consistent provider would be really helpful for baby, and I really think it was. So there's
Yeah.
that, but I think I read a lot of support groups again. I was in them and reading different comments, and just again, I think just relying on other people. We had a friend whose baby was in the NICU and she was wonderful. Like they were wonderful. So again, I think it's just like finding support, and everybody said it feels horrible in the moment, but it's going to be a blip in this story. Like it's just going to be a blip. And it was so hard to like actually believe that. But now it's like, yeah, it went by so quickly. Now he's here. He's perfect. And yeah.
And it was all worth it.
It was all worth it. And I got my bee back. Not exactly how I wanted it, but I got it. So.
Yeah. You know, and we've talked about it on this show where even when we get a bee back, sometimes it's not the ideal birth or the ideal scenario or situation or even experience, right, that we wanted. And in the end, sometimes People are like, I actually don't know if I would have chosen a VBAC. But most of the time, people are like, it was definitely not what I expected, but I'm still very happy with the outcome. Yes.
Absolutely. It made me want to have another baby. Like I've heard that on this podcast, in order to have another VBAC or just, to be able to have that vaginal delivery. Like it was just wonderful.
Yeah. It's funny because I had my VBAC and then I was like, it was really long labor. Like, really long. And I'm like, okay, I want to do that again, only I want to do it faster. And it maybe someday you'll have another one. I think we're done. But yes, such great info that you've shared and such a beautiful story. I'm so glad that he is okay and that you did not get on that plane and all is well. I was thinking about inflammation during pregnancy and how sometimes people can react differently. I like wanted to learn more. I just looked it up really quickly about carpal tunnel affected during pregnancy, and I was kind of shocked. I mean, this is a quick research, like, yeah, just quick. So I don't know the deep depths of studies of this, but it says that it occurs when the median nerve in the wrist is compressed, causing pain, numbness, and tingling in the hand, and it's actually common during pregnancy. I thought it was, I didn't think it was as common, but it says it affects about 60% of women during pregnancy. Did
That's
you?
wild because I've only met a handful, not even a handful. I know like two other people. I was pregnant at the same time as a lot of friends, and only two people that I know I had talked to had experienced that. So I've never met anybody else that says they had carpal tunnel. But
I know.
I'm sure to degrees, sure, like probably like maybe mild carpal tunnel is
Maybe,
60%. Maybe that severe isn't as common. I don't know.
yeah, and I'm not digging deep in. I just like quickly because I wanted to see what it is affecting. And it does say that the hormones cause you to retain fluid, which can soften the ligament, form roof. It says forms the roof of the tunnel and inflammation, which also brought me down to omega-3s. I don't know if anyone ever talked to you about omega-3s, but omega-3s can help because it's fatty acids, can reduce inflammation. It's one of the things that I actually take. I struggle with inflammation just from like daily activity, my joints, working out, lifting, these things. And so I take needed omega-3s, but I thought that was interesting too. I'm wondering if you've struggled with some form or severity of carpal tunnel or inflammation and things like that, or just joint, things swelling around the joint causing pressure and pain, if omega-3s could help. It's worth
That's
asking,
interesting.
right?
Yeah,
Asking a
for
provider.
sure. Yeah.
I know. That just seems like so crazy, like such a high number. So, but obviously it happens and there's things that you can do about it, and sometimes it just gets so severe, like in your case, that you just needed to have a baby to be done with that. Well, thank you so much again for sharing your story with us. Well, stories with us today, and congrats on your VBAC.
Thank you so much. I'm so appreciative of this podcast. It was literally everything I learned about what to avoid and what to do, and like I got it all from exactly. So I appreciate it so much. I really think it's like the driving force in me getting to have a VBAC. So.
Oh, that makes me so happy. So, listen, women of strength, if you're still listening and you've recorded your story, listen just how impactful your stories have been and the things that we share, because each of these stories, they have nuggets of information and education just along the way, in addition to what we share within the podcast and the blog and on our social media. So, and here you are. You're just going to help someone else out there get the information and the motivation to go out and do it. And also a reminder to not get on the plane if we're having symptoms like
Yes.
that.
Don't even,
Don't even consider it, and don't send your husband and your son.
Yes. Thank God.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC link.